Oh yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is The Shawshank Redemption.
Shouldn't you be saying that in a low, slow voice?
Andy Dufresne.
When I first met The Shawshank Redemption.
Press play and press pause. Wilson,
it was a long drink of water.
At the point the Warner
Brothers
logo faded
to black. I didn't much like Down in Front at first.
I feel like I need to join in too.
Come right on ahead.
The first frame of all black.
Just press pause. Why is it in a second, I'll say 3, 2, 1, unpause. I'll press play, you'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except it'll be fucking hopeful.
It'll be 50 years long.
Oh, God. You'll see it in 1996 on TNT. It'll be so much unlike any other commentary. Anyway, but it will have four friends in your head. That makes it different from most commentaries. Myself is always Gene Christie. My friend Brian, William Fenifter.
Greetings.
Mickey doesn't have a middle thing yet. Marsala.
I won't have a middle thing.
We'll figure something out.
It'll come to
your
us.
Your TV Tropes correspondent as well. For TVTropes.org, and Trey, the amazing Stokes.
Hello.
Hello.
The penguins are marching.
Batman climbed
at the
fire.
End of the 20th century.
I don't want to be part of it.
Wow. So
we're all bad at Morgan Freeman. We established that.
That's a good way to start.
Hard to do Morgan Freeman.
Shawshank came out in 94 to the awareness of absolutely nobody.
Yes.
We were talking about this before. I was like, what year did it come out? And Brian was like, 94, I think. And I'm like, it came out in 96 on TNT. Right, gotcha. Yeah.
It's one of the few features that is a straight-to-video, in a way.
Right. Totally, yeah.
It might as well have been.
Obviously, everyone's first experience with Shawshank is, well, I guess not everyone, but most people who see this movie tend to just love it and just immediately latch onto it, even though it doesn't have any of the trappings of your modern major blockbuster movie. It doesn't have major stars at the time. It doesn't even have there's no sex, there's no violence, really. I guess there is.
There's some violence, there's really no action,
it's just this slow paced character drama.
First time director, I mean, kiss of death.
First time director, Stephen King project.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that it's basically a romance between two guys over the course of their lives. Like, it's the least bankable movie you could fucking come up with. And yet...
Matched only by a bad title and a terrible poster.
You don't like the poster?
The poster makes the poster and the title are part of the problem, I think, because Shawshank Redemption doesn't mean anything.
Sure. You're talking about the picture of him in the
rain,
right?
Yeah, the poster looks like... It looks like they sort of a remake of Flashdance and Footloose.
It's our first trope. It's Redemption in the Rain.
Yeah.
Dun dun dun.
Wow.
The poster looks like is this a sequel to Footloose? Because it looks
like he's dancing.
It's the exact same pose as Kevin Bacon in the Footloose poster, except it's in the rain, so you think Flashdance, and Shawshank Redemption doesn't tell you anything. So
I don't want to
see Tim Robbins in a musical. I just don't.
I had sort of the prototypical experience with Shawshank. I caught the end of it first one night, and then I saw the beginning of it another time.
Spoiler.
A few months later, and then, you know, and you eventually just sit down and watch the whole thing, and it's great. It's Shawshank. I mean, we always have trouble with commentaries for really good movies because it's hard to say anything about them. It's sort of like, yep, that is right.
That's totally right. Get comfortable.
So we're gonna have to be scholarly, okay? Now, Brian, you have a beard. Mickey and Trey and I have glasses. I have whiskey, so we can be sort of, yes, and I think that this is saying something about the nature of people and what it means to be a postmodern communist in a teddy bear aisle at Toys R Us. I have no idea. I like this movie. Brian?
We're off to a hell of
a
start.
I like this movie a lot. Yeah. I don't remember, actually, when I first saw it, but I remember it's like, what, that's even before you know anything about how movies go together, you go, this is all there. Everything is here.
Was this the first movie where you were like, oh, that was perfect?
Yeah, this might have been my first experience with a movie where I was like, I don't see anything wrong with that. And the ending is, we talk about a surprising but inevitable ending, and I think this is one of the best examples of that is in existence, I think. It's just a really fantastic, well-made movie.
Exciting.
Yes.
It's going to be a real dogfight.
We're so fucking doomed.
Mickey, save us with your sexy voice.
Well,
how do you feel about Shawshank?
Once upon a time, Shawshank was my favorite movie. Granted, I was 13. Okay, is sexy voice done? Can I be done with it now. Okay, cool. So, yeah, so I was watching Shawshank when I was 13. It was amazing. Anyway, I loved it when I was 13, but as I got older, I started to realize that, you know, things don't need to be spelled out that they are so perfect and idealistic to the audience. Do you think this movie does that? I think it does. I think it really exaggerates the point with, you know, Morgan Freeman's narrations, like, just in case you weren't certain, I am redeemed. Like, the world should be redeemed. Everyone deserves a
chance.
At least
it doesn't end
redeemed.
With him going, and that was my Shawshank redemption.
Or, and that's when Andy and I realized we were redeemed. I mean, really, no. I think it really spells the point. I mean, granted, it does beautifully, but...
Is there any part of the movie that you still think is just perfect and exactly right?
No.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe. I will point... If I see it, I will point it out.
Cool. Trey?
Well, I'd read the novella first, we can go ahead and cop to the fact that we just did The Green Mile, which is another Stephen King-based project.
You're not supposed to know, Trey.
Yeah, yeah. When this goes in the archives, then suddenly the order in which we did them doesn't matter. I said at the time, but I'll say again, because it was in the other commentary where I said it, is that it turns out that Stephen King novellas tend to adapt really well to movies because they're shorter and you don't have to cut out so much. And Darabont, just as he had done with the Dollar Baby that he'd done before that, he did The Woman in the Room, which is one of the few Dollar Babies that ever actually got a real release briefly, although then it was pulled for contractual arguments. But he did a Dollar Baby movie. Look it up. And it's in the show notes, I'm sure. And then he was a screenwriter. He'd written several films. He wrote a film called The Blob that I was affiliated with. And then he got a chance to direct, and he did this. And he and King really liked what he had done with The Woman in the Room. And however the negotiations worked out, he got to do this. But it's a novella, so Darabont didn't have to throw out a lot of stuff. And this movie is almost word for word, with only the most minor of cosmetic changes, exactly from the novella. So just as Green Mile is extremely faithful to that source material. So it's, you have to give King credit for coming up with the story. You just have to give, and you have to give Darabont credit for not Hollywooding it up and screwing it up in the translation and just doing a heck of a job bringing it all together. But when the movie came out, I don't even know if I was aware that it existed. I don't remember. I know I didn't see it in the theater. I don't think I knew it existed or that it was out. Caught it up to it on video later, like everybody else in the world did, and said, not, oh my God, this is the greatest movie of all time. What I said was, that's nice that they didn't fuck up the novella. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a pretty good job of making the novella translate into a movie. Knowing the ending from having read the novella, so they didn't have any of that kind of, oh my God, at the end revelation that you get if you don't know what the story is. I didn't have that experience. And of course, my big thing was, oh, Clancy Brown. That's the Kurgan from Highlander. Awesome. Yeah, good to see him. So I am mystified. I am genuinely mystified by how embraced this movie is by certain people. And I'm not alone, because Frank Darabont can't figure that shit out either. Frank Darabont has said, it's weird how people really like that movie, especially when it started out as a bomb. And to have it sort of, you know, him thinking, I'm never going to work again. I got my one shot and it tanked. But then it was because of video and because of TNT. And Darabont actually has likened it to other films that are now classics, which were bombs at the time. He lists Wizard of Oz and It's a Wonderful Life and Citizen Kane and a few others that, you know, no one at the time thought those were great movies. But it was television that made them into the classics that they are.
Anyway, we had to retime because apparently not all DVDs have a Warner Brothers logo. So... you can always pause this file while you're timing yourself, but Castle Rock's logo fades to black. Pause there.
A Time Warner company, you see, so I guess it depends on when your DVD was forged.
Anyway, I'm assuming that you paused this so you could resync and Mordor. You're ready to go again. Yes. You're at the point where the Castle Rock logo has faded to black, like I am here. 3, 2, 1, unpause.
And we all know that Castle Rock itself is a Stephen King reference, do we not?
We do not.
Of course.
No, Castle Rock is where half of Stephen King's... It's a fictional main town. And I believe Castle Rock was invented to make Stand By Me.
Stand By Me is right.
Yeah. And they said, what are we going to name the... We need a production company to make the Stephen King movie. And so they came up with Castle Rock. But Castle Rock is features in many King stories.
I think this movie is more adept in its use of music in a weird way, more so than The Green Mile, for instance.
You're talking about period music or score?
Yes. Okay. I like not necessarily the choice of songs, just the use of it and the way it works. And it might just be incidental. It might just be I like the way it plays out in this one more. But I like the music that's playing over the intro here, and I like the way that it sets an interesting tone. I also love the score. I'm a massive, massive fan of the score for Shawshank. I think it's in the top 10 scores, which is interesting because at the time, Newman was a young man, and he didn't know exactly how to score it. He didn't know what sound he should be doing, and I guess he had some trouble with that. I'm really happy with what he came up with, particularly the track Brooks Was Here, which plays over the sequence where Brooks was there. and it's just some great stuff. Anyway, Tim Robbins. Who the hell is that guy?
He was the guy from Howard the Duck.
He's in Howard the Duck.
Howard
the Duck.
Duck.
If God had wanted us to fly, he wouldn't have taken away our wings. That's not a Tim Robbins line, but that line is said to Tim Robbins.
Okay.
8 seconds in, we have to already start talking about another movie.
Howard the Duck is great. I cannot wait for the day where
yeah,
we do
why don't
Howard
we do
the Duck.
What's keeping us from doing Howard the Duck?
Really, guys? On Shawshank?
So, 30 seconds into
so
Shawshank.
No one knew who Tim Robbins was at this point then, I guess.
He was an actor you would recognize, but he was not in any way a big movie star.
I still think this is the thing that people know him from.
Well, yeah.
You see,
like,
I mean, Tim Robbins
Sigourney
tends
Weaver
to do
from Alien, you know,
little precocious, adorable indie movies with Clint Eastwood more than anything else.
John Cusack. He'd done a couple of funny little comedies with John Cusack.
This was pretty High Fidelity, though.
Yeah, those are not funny indie comedies. I'm talking about Tapeheads and things like that.
Oh, wow. Comedies I do not know of.
Exactly. They're underground. You wouldn't have heard of them.
Oh, the Shins are so much better than those commentaries.
Yeah. High Fidelity is a big movie. I'm talking about the little movies he used to make. And who is it? Jeffrey DeMunn is the prosecutor, is he not?
The repertory.
The beginning of the Frank Darabont, repertory company.
I'm trying to figure out what it is about this movie that really does appeal to people. It can't just be the message of hope.
There he is.
I mean, you get that in...
It's Tim Robbins' adorable baby face.
Yes.
He's 6'25".
He's like...
I said baby face. I didn't say baby body.
You just want to rape him. You just do. You can't not.
Look at him. He just looks so sweet and innocent. Yeah.
He does look like 12 years old in this movie.
It's true.
So I'm pretty sure that there's not a Frank Darabont directed movie that Jeffrey DeMunn has not been in. And he's also in The Blob, for that matter. But he's in both the ones we've seen today. We know he's in The Mist.
He's in The Walking Dead.
And he's in The Walking Dead. And again, that's... And then the only one... he's got to be in The Majestic. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. So...
I think he is. I do recall him in The Majestic. I could be wrong, but I think he's in the diner. I don't remember. Mickey White, under what set of circumstances did you start not liking this movie again? Did you come back? Were you like, oh, I'm going to see The Shawshank again. I love this movie. And then you saw it, and that one time, it's like...
It's not that I started not liking it. It's that I started not believing it to be as amazing as it was, and therefore is no longer my favorite.
Well, that might explain it then, Trey, why some people really get into it is because if you see it when you're 13... Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was incredible when I was 13. Like, I mean, it was like, wow, these people actually they do things. Like, they deserve to get free, you know, and they do. It's awesome. That's how movies are supposed to be. And then, you know, you hit 14, 15, 16, and you start going.
So you just find the likelihood of this implausible. Is that why you don't like it?
I guess it just. Like, well, you said it was like more about exaggerates the point just too much for me. I think.
Yeah, you said it was more about it kind of. Hammer it kind of spoon feeds you feel
yeah
it, everything that it's doing it's
because,
like did you get it
yeah
have you gotten it yet
yeah because
are you sure
everything you want to happen does happen in a very exaggerated fashion so I don't know
I don't necessarily
he crawls through miles of shit to get free Brian
it's a metaphor it's an allegory
really yes. Really
is it really
I was
I'm
unawares.
Okay.
Could you spell that one out for me? Roger Deakin shot this. No kidding. The I did not know that. The to put credit or blame where it's due. A great deal of Red's narration is because the novella itself is written from Red's character's point of view, and a lot of that is verbatim from the novella. So, you know, he is spelling things out, but it's spelled out according to how the original was structured. Now, this one, I don't believe the novella starts with the courtroom scene. This is just to kind of get the ball rolling. The novella is all told from the point of view of Red. This information comes out later where Andy Dufresne tells him about how he came to be in prison. Mm-hmm. This is a good, you know, a good acceptable switch, though, to sort of get the ball rolling so that we get to see all this exposition and not get it told to us or have to do a flashback or anything. So they started. They just switched the order of these events, but the novella starts with the fish bus coming to the prison, as I recall.
See, I don't necessarily have a problem with a movie. Like, yes, if a movie really spoon feeds, and everybody's mileage varies on exactly what constitutes too much, but I would rather a movie be too clear about something than be too vague about something.
Like I said, it wasn't that it was no longer good. It was just that it was no longer my favorite. So.
Fuck. God damn it.
Well, I am sitting
trying
in
to generate
very...
some controversy here.
Rabble.
I'm sorry. I will be less civil and logical. I will now say, screw you, Brian. I disagree entirely.
Screw you. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Your vague politeness about this movie infuriates me. And I will not have it.
It confuses and frightens me.
So this is that Morgan Freeman dude. Is he in like everything? Is this the beginning
he's the
of
Michael Caine?
Was this the beginning of Morgan Freeman in everything?
Probably. I don't think he was in anything major before this. Driving Miss Daisy was before this, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah, that was 92 or something, right?
Yeah.
And here's where I'm actually going to try to get out of prison.
Yeah. So this is a do we do this three times?
Three times,
yeah.
And Morgan Freeman has said he doesn't like watching himself 89. On screen, but he enjoys watching these bits. 89?
Really?
89. Driving Miss Daisy was 89?
Driving Miss Daisy was 89.
Driving Miss Daisy.
Sounds like Forrest Gump. I like the very, very early pseudo-photo of Morgan Freeman there. It's very cute.
It looks
which is actually his son.
Oh, good. I was going to say, it looks a lot like him.
They couldn't get a picture of him as Easy Reader from the electric company and drop that in?
This is pre-Photoshop. Well, actually, it's not. It's pre them having Photoshop.
It's pre anybody in the movie business knowing about Photoshop.
Uh-oh.
Silence fell.
This isn't going to work. We can't say anything about Shawshank.
Get to the redemption,
okay,
quickly.
So in the book, Red was supposed to be a white Irishman.
Yes. They actually have to make a joke about it here. Like, why do they call you Red? Like, yeah, because I'm Irish.
Which actually... results in a trope, but I suppose I'll wait until that point because I don't have it readily queued.
The first intention of making this movie was Rob Reiner wanted to make it with Tom Cruise and Harrison Ford. That was the first intent.
I could see Harrison Ford as Red.
Yeah, I could.
I couldn't see Tom Cruise as Andy.
I could.
I couldn't see him as.
I could see a studio seeing Tom Cruise as Andy.
Yeah,
I couldn't necessarily see Harrison Ford. In 94.
Yeah.
Like, now I think would be,
I think,
he'd be suitable for
I think him. He'd be great as Red now. That'd be a great character. He's kind of playing that character in Cowboys and Aliens in a way. You know, that sort of that role, fitting that role in the story. I understand the trivia is this is like actually a boys' reform school. Is that the truth of it?
Mansfield something.
This fantastic building.
It is quite beautiful.
There aren't a lot of these in the world, in the country, that you can go shoot a movie in. That's for darn sure.
I'm just surprised they found a different one for Green Mile.
Yeah. And that's a hell of a shot they just did, too.
A lot of extras.
It was in Houston. I went to Houston for a friend's wedding in March, and we're driving out to where the reception is or the whatever. And we just drive by this great big Shawshank-looking prison. It's gorgeous, and it's just in the middle of nowhere. Cool
was
story,
it, was, bro. Was it the same place?
No, I mean, it's just like...
Oh, you saw a building once?
It was very much this idea of like, you know, you see this and you go, wow, there can't be that too many of those out there. They must have found the only one. It's like, oh, no, there's this beautiful, gorgeous thing here, too.
Of death and pain.
If I ever need to shoot a prison movie, if I ever make my Shawshank, I know where I'm coming.
You should make your Shawshank about a guy who's kind of halfway Jesus.
And
maybe I can get Tom Hanks in. I love Tom Hanks.
Yeah. You can call him G.
Oh, like Tom Hanks should do a movie like
no,
that.
No, we need a black guy because it needs to be a magical Negro.
Yes. But make it a period piece, definitely.
And black and white, please.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. That'd be awesome. There's Clancy Brown. And I suppose to fill time in this excruciatingly long movie, I'll have to tell all my Clancy Brown stories because we'll probably never do Pet Sematary 2. So. Clancy's one of those guys that he's. I guess is Clancy a that guy? Clancy is.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Clancy, I think he's a nerd. That guy. I think
Clancy
all the movies
up,
that
yeah.
geeks love.
He is like a genre that guy. He's because he's been. I mean, that he's been in everything from Lost. When he popped up on Lost, I was like, oh my god, look at that. But to me, Clancy will always be the Kurgan from Highlander, which is just an amazing.
Speaking of genre,
yeah,
he'll always be Private Zim.
Did you know that the movie just gave me my nickname? You guys weren't paying attention, but I can now be Mickey Buttsteak Marsala.
Because?
It said he called him butt steak.
Okay.
According to the captions.
I think Trey's question was more how that ended up on your name.
Yeah.
Oh,
are you just, clearly. Are you just claiming that?
I'm claiming it because it's butt steak. Okay. Dear God.
She's taking it back.
I think that people need butt steak.
Mickey butt steak muscle. Okay. If you want it, it can be yours.
I want it.
I
yes.
I don't see a bidding war erupting over that one.
I think that butt steak sounds not only delicious but nutritious.
My God, look, there's William Sadler. Is this a Frank Darabont movie?
No.
Well, if you see William Sadler, you know Frank Darabont has to be close by. As I know, Sadler has been in three. And again, we need to check. No one saw The Majestic.
I saw it, but I didn't care.
I just think of Martin Landau when I think of The Majestic. Yeah. But I've never seen it all the way through. But Sadler's been in three that we name, unless he's also in The Majestic.
Is he in Walking Dead?
No.
Not yet. Not so far. He's in.
He's in The Mist, though. He's in the Mist and Green Mile and this.
He's also in.
Talking features.
He plays a recurring character in Deep Space Nine. A very cool character. They do a secret section of Starfleet that basically is like the CIA version that nobody knows about that goes off and does all these dark non-utopian things to keep the utopia safe.
I met Sadler once at a Halloween party. He was a nice guy, so I have like a 3-minute history with him. But I did a whole movie with Clancy, so get back to that one. But he's Sergeant Zim in Starship Troopers. And here we did another movie together and never met because, of course, we never crossed paths during Starship Troopers. But worked with him quite a bit on Pet Sematary too. And it took me a while to get over the fanboy squee factor of, it's the Kurgan from Highlander. But he's a very large boy, and he enjoys pushing you around just to see what you do. If you push back, then you're cool. But he's in Pet Sematary 2. He plays the bad sheriff dude in Pet Sematary 2, and so I worked with him a lot, and he's actually a very fun guy. But he is large and scary.
He's a lichen?
He's a what now?
He's a lichen. He's a fun guy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He is. So we had to, spend hours. I didn't because I wasn't doing a hands-on. My job was dead dogs. But Bart Mixon, who was the key makeup guy for our team, had to put him in his zombie makeup every day. And so he and Bart would be in the makeup room for 3 hours every morning and then 2 hours every night to take the stuff off. There was one amazing. We had the most amazing parties. And by amazing, I mean the cops came a lot. To the parties that they would have at
people
night.
Came. Everyone came.
Yeah, everyone came. But
as guests?
No, not really. Yeah, to make those Hollywood people.
The girls dressed as cops came.
Yeah, I mean, literally, we shot Pet Sematary 2 in a small town outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm talking small. And how small was it? I'll tell you. We had this entire Hollywood film crew all plunked into, apartments and houses in this tiny, tiny town. And when people would get together to blow off steam, oh, my God, they would just blow off some serious steam. And the cops were like, oh, there go those Hollywood people. So one night, Bart and Clancy got into it. They actually started wrestling in the middle of someone's living room floor. And the whole room, just everyone, we all cleared back to the walls because Clancy and Bart, who was also a big guy, they literally were just like grappling and just tumbling around the room. And everyone just like backed up and we're trying to move the furniture out of the way. Like, holy shit.
Someone moved that aquarium.
Yeah. And that was the kind of party that we go to. And that was Clancy's idea of fun. We'd also go to, sometimes we go to the sushi bar, the one sushi bar outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And Clancy would sit in the chairs and they would break. And he would go, what is with your chairs here? He would go, Clancy, you're a large American man, and these are small Japanese chairs, and it's just not meant to work out that way.
They probably looked at him like the Ewoks looked at C-3PO.
Pretty much, yeah. They take you in the back, and they have a statue of him. Like, we knew he was coming someday.
So do you suppose that you'd bet on Dufresne because he's the tallest and most melancholy looking of the new fish coming in? Like,
what's the psychology of the new fish game?
Picking the one that's going to crack first.
I think it's whoever looks the most alarmed and breakable, I guess. I mean, Andy doesn't look breakable.
He was tall, and he was just the most melancholy looking of them all, but I wouldn't have picked him as my winner.
I think the setup was that he was so clearly like a college boy. He's not a criminal, that he's just not going to be able to survive in here.
Uh,
But it turns out to be somebody else. It's the other guy. It's the other guy who cracks.
It's the Patton Oswalt guy.
Yeah. Oswalt.
If they remade this movie today, Patton Oswalt would be...
Oswalt would be the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you couldn't, you know, not be fun. You know, you'd be, you couldn't help but laugh. Then the pathos wouldn't be there.
Uh-oh.
Let's kill it. This isn't working.
Uh-oh.
we need to kill it.
I'm okay with killing it.
No, I was gonna try and keep on going.
I'm gonna keep saying uh-oh because it's all I got.
I think we depleted all our Darabont talk and energy.
I like the uh-oh though.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Did you know that we had 30 seconds of quiet? Uh-oh.
Yeah. It's like a little timer. Like a little timer that goes
off. No one will ever know. Come back to it.
Bing.
It's like the Oscars.
We did our two movies today, okay?
It's like if you have more than 30 seconds of dead air, that's when the FCC steps in. You have to pay a fine. It's really...
If we have more than 30 seconds of dead air in 2 minutes, I'm nope.
It's an ugly...
It's the first 20 minutes of the movie.
It's an ugly yeah. thing.
It is okay. Brian's fault. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Wait, whoa. Yeah. Why?
Zarban, it was Brian's fault.
Why?
He wasn't saying anything. This is totally and entirely true. I support it 100%. Oh, this theory is
That's
sound.
That's our first one. We couldn't get it up. We couldn't get it up.
Shawshank Redemption. Not even we can get it up.
Oh, boy.
Cheers, chat room. Wow.
See?
I wasn't desperately trying.
Not so easy, is it?
No. My God.
I had your mother. She wasn't that great.
We could have been making Morgan Freeman jokes the entire time, and we were withholding.
We're going to come back to this one in a couple weeks.
You guys were sensitive to the Morgan Freeman jokes, and we decided that instead of just doing the entire commentary in Morgan Freeman's voice, we would be sensitive to that. And look at what you did, chat room. You fucked us.
Wow.
No.
Does it seem anachronistic that Clancy Brown's character just used the word malfunction? What do
you
think
that
came into prominence?
I don't know.
No, they did complain initially. Like, it's going to be all Morgan Freeman jokes in this commentary.
Yeah, we'll show you.
For the new listeners, for the new people that are in the chat room, haven't been here before, Farley, for instance, that's never happened. We've never lost wood in the middle of a commentary before.
There's times we should have. There's plugs we should have pulled.
We finished a commentary and decided, not that one, like Tron. But, wow.